everyone, this is an unthinkable tragedy.
Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge broke apart and fell into the water seconds after a cargo ship crashed into one of the bridge's supports. 8 construction workers were on the bridge when the crash happened. 2 were rescued, and the bodies of the 2 others have been recovered. The other 4 are presumed dead. The bridge collapse is the deadliest in the U.S. in more than a decade. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today, we're going to talk about whether a similar disaster could happen in Greater Cincinnati. Joining me now are University of Cincinnati College of Engineering and Applied Science Professor Richard Miller. Thanks for being here, Richard.
Thank you for having me.
And the Ohio section of the American Society of Civil Engineers, past president, Craig Hebebrand. Welcome to the program, Craig.
Thank you for having me.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Richard, what caused the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore to collapse so quickly and so completely?
So, as a structural engineer, my job is to get a load out of a structure through what we call a load path into the foundation. The load path has to have 2 properties. The structural members have to be strong enough, and the structure has to maintain its shape. Ideally, what we want is what's called a redundant structure that has more load paths than it needs to get the loads out. Unfortunately, this is a truss bridge. Trusses are older technologies, and once you destroy a single member in a truss, it can't maintain its shape anymore, and it collapses. So basically, when that very large ship hit the support, the bridge did have more supports than it needed. But probably when it hit the support, it destroyed some of the truss members, and it just couldn't maintain its shape, and it collapsed.
So, Richard, it sounds like the design of the bridge was part of this. Was the age of the bridge also a factor? What role did age and design play in this collapse?
So, I can tell you, this bridge was built in 1976. Craig and I were both in engineering school in the late 70s. We just didn't have the technology back then that we have today. I mean, truss bridges have been used safely and well for probably about 150 years. But at this time, we're using an older code. We're doing calculations by hand. We don't have the kind of computerized analysis we have today. We don't have the materials we have today that are, 3 to 4 times stronger than what we had previously. And we don't have some of the technologies. So at the time, the engineers did the best they could with the technology they had available. But today we just have better technology.
Craig, how often are bridges like this inspected?
Ohio's bridges are inspected every year, so we got a pretty good idea of what the conditions are in the state, and the other municipalities that have structures can monitor them and plan for rehabilitation and repairs in advance of needing them. Hmm.
There's been a lot of talk about how big this container ship was that hit the bridge and how fast it was moving. Craig, can any bridge be designed to withstand that kind of impact?
That's an extremely large ship. It was much larger than the ships that were in existence when that bridge was built. That bridge was struck by a smaller ship soon after it was built and survived minimal damage. I'm not sure it's able to build a structure that would resist that entire. The idea is to protect it. Can you deflect it to keep it from making a direct strike on the critical structure elements?
Yeah. What do you think, Richard? Is there a bridge that could have withstood the kind of hit that the Francis Scott Key Bridge took?
I saw something interesting. One of the Columbus news organizations published that ship is bigger than the biggest building in downtown Columbus. That's how big this thing is. Can we do it? I mean, with enough money and enough time, we can do anything. It becomes a question of, is it reasonable to do that? I would imagine that when they build the new bridge, they will do a number of things to try to make sure something like this doesn't happen again.
We're talking about the deadly bridge collapse that happened in Baltimore and whether a similar disaster could happen here. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Craig, there are modern buildings that are designed with infrastructure that's supposed to be able to withstand disasters. Can or does that kind of design happen with bridges?
Yeah, we talk about resiliency, the ability to absorb and recover from an incident. And generally, they can't. You know, the bridges take a tremendous load. They occasionally get struck, and most of them survive with minor damage or can be corrected fairly quickly.
Richard, could this kind of disaster happen here in Greater Cincinnati with any of the bridges that span the Ohio River? We have some that are a heck of a lot older than the one in Baltimore.
Obviously anything's possible, but it is highly improbable. We just don't have ships that are that big that go down the Ohio River. And, we have barge traffic and, if a barge strikes one of our bridges, it'll do some damage, but I don't see a very high possibility that something's going to hit one of these bridges and cause the kind of damage that this large container ship created. So I'm not particularly worried about our bridges. And also, too, we're constantly upgrading them. So over time, things are just going to get better.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit more about that, Richard, because you mentioned barges. They're not nearly as big as this container ship that hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge, but they're big. What makes it less likely that a barge could do this kind of damage? Is it because of the size and weight of the barge, because of the speed it's going? What makes the difference there?
So when something strikes something else, what's important is the amount of energy, which is dependent on both the weight and how fast it's going. And the simple fact is that these barges weigh a whole heck of a lot less than this large container ship. Again, this container ship is the size of a building. I mean, this thing is huge, and we just don't have anything going down the river that's quite that big. And yes, it could hit. Yes, it could do some damage. But it just doesn't have, this ship, I read, weighs over 200 million pounds. I mean, that's just huge. And I don't think you're going to get anything nearly that big on the rivers.
Hmm. One of you mentioned before how there is technology or there's an attempt to kind of slow down ships if they get near bridges, divert them to really protect bridges. Craig and Richard, I'd like to ask you both, but I'll start with you, Craig. Talk to us a little bit more about some of that technology. I heard about a structure called a dolphin. Tell us about what's going on to try to prevent these kinds of things from happening.
Sure. When the Sunshine Bridge in Florida was struck by a vessel and knocked down, when they rebuilt that bridge, if you look at a photo of it now, an aerial picture, you'll see round devices before each pier. They call dolphins there. Essentially caissons that are a rigid structure that the vessel would have to strike first so that it protects the pier itself from being hit directly. And you'll look at that bridge, which has multiple structures in the water, and there's a series of those devices in front of each pier on both directions of travel.
Are there other devices too that are used in this way, Richard, to try to kind of deflect or protect bridge structures?
Yeah, there are various ones. I mean, the dolphins are one. Sometimes they'll actually put like a wall in the water that will deflect it. Of course, the other thing too that you can do is you can also try to design the supports so that, if something does get past the initial protection will have slowed it down and supports can take the impact a lot better.
Mm-hmm. How common is that technology, Richard? I mean, do we have anything like that in Greater Cincinnati protecting our bridges?
I don't know of any of them at this point. But again, I don't know what the necessity for that would be. You know, the engineers do look at these things and decide whether or not that technology is needed. Because again, if you're not dealing with large vessels, it is possible that something could in fact strike the support, and the support is more than adequate to take it. There's always the problem that we have, especially in the public arena, that you only have so much money to fix things. And we have a lot of bridges that for other reasons need to be fixed. So it's a matter of how we best spend the public's money.
Yeah. Well, Craig, I want to talk to you about that because I know the Ohio section of the American Society of Civil Engineers issued a report card for Ohio's infrastructure, a 2021 report card. The state's bridges got a C+, which was a better grade than several of the infrastructure items that you all examined. What about bridges locally in Greater Cincinnati? How do you think of their condition? How would you rate their condition?
Well, you know, I was responsible with the Ohio report card, so I don't really have specific information on the Cincinnati metro area, though generally the bridges across the country and within Ohio are regionally very close in the same condition. I mean, one of the things you have is you've got some older bridges, particularly in the urban area that, you know, are 100 years or more of age. Most of the bridges in the state are about 50 years old, about half of them. So you've got a lot of bridges. At that point, they're going to need bridge decks. But depending on the conditions they've been in, how well they've been maintained, they may need additional work done to extend their lives.
And Craig, how well do you think they're being maintained? I know you're speaking more of bridges in Ohio as a whole, more so than locally. But how well do you think Ohio is doing when it comes to maintaining bridges?
I think they're doing pretty well, and it's a lot of little things. I mean, it's just sweeping the berms to get that debris off the edges of the bridges, which would otherwise hold water and accelerate the deterioration. It's maintaining the paint surfaces. If you have a good coating on the steel, it extends the life of the steel. So there's a lot of things that can be done to extend the life of a bridge, which is much more cost effective than ultimately having to replace the bridge at the end of its life.
Mm-hmm. Richard, you know, we've talked a lot about how, you know, we're not going to have container ships the size of the one involved in Baltimore. It's too big for the river traffic that we get. You talked about, you know, how barges are just not nearly that big. They couldn't do that kind of damage. What about other concerns? I mean, you know, there were a couple of semis that collided on the Brent Spence Bridge a few years ago and caused a fire that closed down the bridge for months. Are there other concerns that people should have about, you know, our bridges and how safe they are, Richard?
So one of the things we do at the university is we have a large lab, and we actually bring bridge girders in and we test them. I'm constantly amazed at how strong these things really are and how much damage bridge elements can take and still be able to hold load. You know, I mean, there was a fire on the Brent Spence, and the engineers went in and the bridge didn't collapse, and the engineers went in and were able to fix it. Bridges get hit a whole lot more than people realize they do. They're designed for that. And in most cases, the worst thing that happens is there's a tremendous inconvenience when you have to close the bridge to fix it. But the incidence of these kind of things where something strikes a bridge and causes this kind of loss of life is actually fairly rare. And I was relating the other day, you may recall probably 10, 15 years ago, a truck was transporting a railroad locomotive and the truck lost control and a railroad locomotive went into the pier of a bridge on I-275. And the bridge survived. We had to fix it. And someone was asking me, don't you design bridges to be hit by locomotives? And I said, not if they're not over railroads. So here was a very unusual case, and the bridge still survived.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about how our bridges that go across the Ohio River are different from the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Some of them are about the same age or older, but they are they how different are the designs from this truss bridge that didn't have these redundancies, Richard?
Well, actually, two of the bridges, the Brent Spence and the Taylor Southgate, are in fact truss bridges. They are older bridges, and the state of Kentucky does make sure they go out and take a good look at them. All of these truss-style bridges underwent very heavy inspection after the collapse of a similar bridge, the I-95 bridge in Minnesota. And so they are constantly looking at them. They are very expensive to replace, but we do it. The Jeremiah Morrow Bridge up by Wilmington was a truss bridge. And it was removed, and you might remember they had quite a bit of trouble removing that bridge. But it's now replaced with a much more modern, what we call a segmental box structure. So over time, as these bridges need to be replaced, we are in fact replacing them with more modern structures. But the ones that are there, again, we have to remember this was an incredibly unusual incident. And from time to time, those things are just going to happen.
We're talking about the deadly bridge collapse that happened in Baltimore and whether a similar disaster could happen here. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Craig, you referenced before a bridge at the end of its life and trying to determine the life cycle of a structure like this. How and when do engineers determine that and make recommendations about replacing an entire bridge?
Well, and again, it has a lot to do with the annual inspections, right? The bridge has a lifetime of annual inspections, at least from the 1970s on, when the current bridge inspection standards went into effect. So you can track the progress of that bridge. A lot of times it's just an element or two. The deck needs to replace. A lot of cases, the foundations can last well over 100 years. In many cases, the superstructures can. Decks typically need to be replaced at 50 years. So it's constantly looking at these bridges and looking at the individual elements and determining a work plan to, you know, continually extend the life. A lot of times when a bridge gets replaced, it's not simply for structural reasons, but sometimes it's for capacity reasons. You know, traffic demands have changed and the existing bridge simply isn't going to accommodate the demands that are there today.
Well, let's talk about that in relation to the Brent Spence Bridge, Richard, because, you know, I know a lot of people who kind of white knuckle across that bridge when they have to drive it. It doesn't have emergency lanes. We've been told it's obsolete in terms of its capacity, that it was designed to accommodate far fewer cars than it currently does. But the plan for the corridor project is to keep that bridge, to reduce the number of lanes, add some emergency lanes, but build a companion bridge. That's not coming down. What should people who aren't engineers understand about that? Is that bridge safe? It's just got too much traffic. Should we be freaked out that it's a truss bridge? How should people think about the Brent Spence in its current form?
So the Brent Spence would have been originally designed for four lanes. You design a bridge for the number of lanes it can take, not how you stripe it. So as a bridge engineer, if the bridge could theoretically hold four lanes, even if two of them are emergency, I have to design for all four lanes. And, you know, Craig made a good point. You know, nobody in the 1960s expected the volume of traffic that we have today. If that bridge is moved back to two lanes, it will be just fine. It's just fine now. It's just, I agree with you, it's a little scary to drive across because there aren't any emergency lanes on it. As far as it being a truss bridge, you know, again, if properly maintained, it should not have any problems. When I drive across that bridge, I don't worry about the bridge falling in the water. What worries me is if something breaks down on the bridge with no emergency lanes, there's nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary to see a crash happen right in front of you or right behind you on that bridge because there's as you said, there's no place to go for these cars. So, Craig, are state and local and federal governments investing enough in these bridges that are so important to commerce and local communities? I know this report card that the Ohio section of the American Society of Civil Engineers issued in 2021 had some recommendations about funding and what investments should be made in these important structures.
Yeah, you know, right now we are investing at a good pace, a little faster than they were a few years ago. The state gas tax is up to 38.5 cents. We've got money from the federal side on the bipartisan infrastructure law. But again, we've got that large group of bridges that just passed their 50th birthday and are going to need additional attention. I think we were replacing 20 years ago 500 bridges a year. And really, to keep pace with the deterioration and the aging of the bridges, we probably need to do almost twice that, close to 1,000 bridges a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it might be important at this point, Craig, explain how your organization defines a bridge. Because I think when, you know, non-engineers think of a bridge, they think of the Brent Spence or the Roebling. But you all define bridges a little bit differently.
Yeah, and they're actually the state of Ohio and the federal highway administration do it slightly different. Ohio, anything that spans 10 feet is a bridge and gets treated as a bridge. On the federal level, anything over 20 feet. So our report card's based on the federal definition to be consistent with the other states. So there's relatively small bridges in that group, as well as bridges as big as the Brent Spence.
Mm-hmm. Craig, you were talking about how, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, it would have been impossible for engineers designing the Brent Spence to know how much traffic it would try to accommodate. How do engineers deal with that currently? I mean, for the Companion Bridge, for example, are engineers going to be thinking, how much traffic could this accommodate in the future? How do people, engineers, think about that when they're designing new bridges these days?
Yeah, we use regional travel demand models. So it's a large model of the traffic, and there's a lot of inputs as far as development and what's anticipated. And generally, the outlook is 20 years out. So 20 years beyond when the bridge is expected to be open to traffic is how far out they'd look for how much traffic it needs to be able to handle. Mm-hmm.
Richard, it's still so soon after this disaster in Baltimore, just last week that happened. But what do you think are some of the lessons, if any, that can be learned from what happened there?
So one of the things that we will do as the engineering community is we will take a good hard look at this disaster. We will go through and review our design methodologies. We'll review our codes. If they need to be updated or changed, we will look at that. So, you know, we will do all that we can to prevent these disasters from happening. But the simple fact of the matter is, life is a risk. Things can simply happen. No one can anticipate. I mean, earlier in your broadcast, the weatherman said thunderstorms. I could walk out of this building and get hit by a lightning bolt. That stuff can happen. But, you know, that kind of stuff is rare. And I think what we need to keep in mind is this was an incredibly unusual event. And it is a great tragedy, but it's not the kind of thing that people should worry about as happening more frequently than it does.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati College of Engineering and Applied Science Professor Richard Miller and the Ohio section of the American Society of Civil Engineers past president, Craig Hebebrand. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, we'll talk with a Kentucky lawmaker who wants to make fluoride optional in the state's drinking water. And then we'll hear from someone who is opposed to that idea. This is Cincinnati Edition.